Great to have you. We're excited about being able to present this morning, of course, an update on our building plan. It is an update on the progress as it has come along, but by no means is finished. And we look forward to keeping you updated in the year to come. We're a church, right? And we want to obviously honor the Lord in everything we do. We even want to remember Him in the details of even this presentation. So let's begin our time by giving thanks to the Lord. Father, we're grateful this morning to be able to come together as the body of Christ to hear and see the things that you're doing among us. We're mindful that as we speak about those things that have come to pass, as we think about those things that will be, that all things are of you and through you and to you. We're mindful, even as we think about the plans that we make as men, that you're the one who directs our steps. As we think about resources and opportunities, those are that which comes by your hand. And so we bathe everything we say today with the appropriate reverence, the appropriate gratitude to our Maker, to our Redeemer, to our Sustainer, and to our Giver. Lord, we pray that you would be honored, not just by the moments ahead as we speak about the upcoming building, but even by the way that we would use it, the way that we would function and live and be as a church. And I do pray, as we continue to move forward through a process of planning and, if by your will, one day building, that we would never be about a building or never be about any earthly and temporal image, but that we would always be dedicated to your glory and honor, walking faithful in obedience to the gospel. And we ask all these things by your grace in the name of our Savior, Jesus Christ. Amen. Well, we have just a few things to kind of go through. You'll have to forgive me in the brevity of time that we have. I try to cover the information that's necessary. Understanding you can't cover everything, but we're going to try to have a few moments for question and answer at the end of our presentation. So if you have questions, just hold those, and we'll do our best to get to as many of them as we can in time for our worship hour. Let me see if I can run this thing. There we go. Just a little review of how we got to where we are, just looking back historically at what the Lord has done through us. We talk about our growth in terms of attendance. This is, of course, what brought about the whole idea of a new building, a new location. And you'll see the growth rate. I can't see on this little screen. I think it's 11.3 has been the average population growth of the church. You'll see there are peaks at various times. I think this year the peak was as typical on Easter Sunday. But the trend has remained fairly steady as we move forward. Along with that has been the annual growth in our receipts, our giving, and that's to the Lord's honor and certainly with gratitude to everyone who participates in that. We've grown on average over the last 12 years, 14.4% per year in our growth. We've had certainly years that have been better than that and years that have been not as good, but that's been the average as it works its way through. And one more helpful slide I thought would be just to compare on the red line the growth in our attendance versus the black trend line, which is the growth in our finances, just to point out what we've have made known to you in the past, which is that our giving typically outstrips our attendance, and that has allowed us to be able to do some things, thankfully, with those resources in a way that doesn't overburden the ministry. And so we expect that probably to continue to be the case moving forward. With that said, we have talked among ourselves as elders about how to plan for the future, how to plan for this building, that even with a 14% growth rate, we felt like it wasn't necessarily prudent to use that as our metric, but 12% has been something that we've tossed around as a possible scenario. And really what I have to present to you today are a couple of possible scenarios. We don't know the future. We're not prophets in that sense, but we just put together plans of what may happen and how we would proceed if that's the case. And so this represents here a scenario in which the church continues to grow at a robust rate, 12% growth rate each year financially and from a population standpoint. And you can see the way the numbers kind of work themselves out there. I'll walk you through a couple of these. The one that we really are focused on, you'll see along the yellow line, is the overall percentage of our debt service for our income. And we have, even with a very big challenge of building this kind of a building and making this kind of a purchase of the property, we've tried to maintain a threshold, a maximum of 25% debt service to our income. And you'll see the way this works out if we continue on a 12% growth rate. Of course, you know, as we found in the past, we have borrowed money in the past to do construction, to do purchase of property, and then as we have grown into that, that payment percentage has gone down. No guarantee that would happen for sure, but that has certainly been the trend, thankfully, in the past. There's also scenarios where we wouldn't grow as fast. We could grow, for example, with this slide, as it shows, at 8%. The numbers carry down in terms of what the overall income is, what the excess cash is, and that all has an impact ultimately on the budget. But again, you'll see that those percentages of debt service to income, although they go up, they still operate within the threshold that we are targeting, at least as elders. All that to say is, at this point, it would seem, if the Lord wills, that we could potentially break ground on our new construction next year, late next year, at least with site work, not on the building proper. And then on the building proper, the following year, in 2017, we would break ground on the building, if you assume maybe a 12-14-month build process for that, we would occupy the building in 2018. You'll see along the top line there, the 12% growth rate for attendance as it goes up. You'll have to forgive me. I can't read my numbers very clearly on this little screen, but I'll trust that you can. I guess I could look around, right? There it is. So this is showing a 12% growth rate. It actually is not, accurate related to this year. We're not growing quite that rate, a 12% population growth this year. And so that 473 average number is a little bit higher than what we're currently seeing. But if we were to maintain over a series of 3 years that same historic trend, you'll see when we look to actually occupy the building, we would potentially be running 669 on average around that. And that will, of course, dictate some of the decisions that we have to make. Probably the biggest one, and this would be the right time to address it, would be the size of our worship center. This has facility has 600 chairs in it right now. You can kind of look around and get a feeling of what that is. This is, I think, a little bit just slightly larger than the floor size of the sanctuary that we're going to be building, but we're not necessarily planning to pack them in maybe quite as tight as we have here. So we're right now looking at a sanctuary, I believe, that's scheduled to hold 640 chairs. That's with 12 square feet per person. Now, yeah, you're laughing because you know it's Faith Community Church. That's a luxury, 12 square feet per person. We have operated as low as 8.5 square feet per person, especially in our old building. So we don't know how that's going to look, but at this point, it would seem that, at least with the financial situation we have, we're going to build a building that, from the very get-go, if not very quickly after we move in it, we will have to be moving back to two services. And we do that for financial reasons. We do that because we're trying to manage this and manage the cost and manage the debt, obviously, as best we can. The Lord may not see fit to grant us that much stewardship of people, and so it may not be the issue whenever we roll around to occupying the building, but at least from a historical standpoint, that's the way it looks. Just a quick overview of how things have changed. We gave a presentation to you about a year and a half ago, January of 2014, and I know some of you remember that, some of you were here for that. A few things have changed that I just wanted to highlight. I can't go through everything, but some significant things that have changed along the way that you need to be aware of. The first is that at that point, when we were initially discussing this, we talked about a 23,000 square foot building, and or maybe a 24,000 square foot building, somewhere in there. We have, as we've looked at it and assessed it and tried to make decisions, we've grown from a 400 seat sanctuary to a 640 seat sanctuary, and that has caused the building to go from 23,000 to 35,000 square feet. I mean, it's thanks to the Lord that we have the potential to even look at something like that, but it has made a difference. What's really allowed us to even think in that direction is because our income, the receipts of the church, have been very healthy. As I've mentioned to you in the past, on the typical growth track of 12% that we projected to you back in that day, we were scheduled to take up this year around $998,000. At this point, just on the weekly average of $21,450, I think something like that, if you just multiply that times 52 weeks, it'll come out to about $1.1 million that we look to possibly receive this year. And we're grateful, so grateful for your generosity and sacrifice as we move forward in this. It gives us latitude to be able to look at some other things. The other significant change that has taken place is our thoughts in January of that year really were all related to the straight sale of our building. In other words, we thought that we would market our building, find a buyer, receive the payment, and then walk away. But as we got into marketing the building and talking to the various people and the agents who were representing different buyers, our building was mismatched, you might say, in terms of the sanctuary size versus the kind of budget that would be necessary to pull off that kind of a purchase. And so in order to get the maximum amount of cash out of our building, we decided to go with a lease purchase offer from one of the buyers. It allowed us to receive really what we felt like was the fair price for our building, just a little bit under our asking price. But at the same time, it didn't necessarily infringe on our timing, because we weren't expecting that we would break ground immediately anyway. So this just simply allows us the time to be able to gather ourselves and prepare ourselves financially for this move, and also be able to, as I said, get the maximum amount of credit for our last building. All that brings a change where, you know, we said a year and a half ago we would think about maybe breaking ground in the summer of 2016, where now it's pushed back probably 8 or 9 months till the spring of 2017. And so that's been another significant change, I think, in the plan, but not anything certainly outside of the Lord's design. A couple of talking points just before we look at some of the images of this building, just some building design priorities that we have. We could list, believe me, probably 20 or 30 of these, but some that you need to keep in mind as you think about our building. First of all, that we try to be budget conscious. You will inevitably think of something that we could add to the building. Believe me, we've thought of all of them, and we have thought of probably more than you'll ever think of. There's lots of things that go into buildings, lots of bells and whistles and spaces and all kinds of things. We certainly want to have a nice building, but at the same time, we want to be modest in our expectations. So our design has tried to be budget conscious along the way. We've tried to think of an efficient use of space. Just a little background, you know, at one point we had begun a relationship with an architect, and he presented us with a design for a building, and the best way to describe it was it was a big hallway with some rooms attached to it along the way. And as we looked at it, it has a wonderful hallway. It was going to be maybe the world's best hallway that we had. But we didn't know if that was the best use of our money to build a hallway. And it was necessary because of the design of the building, the way it was spread out over time, it required that kind of circulation space. And so we really kind of brought it back in-house amongst ourselves and started to ask ourselves, how could we more effectively use circulation space as also fellowship space and other space like that? And so as we get to our design of our building, I'll explain some of the ways that we've done that and reason we have some, the building the way it is. But that's been one of the things that has driven our design priorities. The other thing is that it's easily expandable. We wanted to think through multiple phases of the building from the very beginning so that as you construct the building moving forward, it works together with itself. And so that is something you'll see as well. And then finally, we wanted something that would be distinctive in terms of our theological framework. Architecturally, it would speak to the fact that we are a Reformed church. I've told this to a number of different people, but when you launch down that pathway and you want to identify with, you know, doctrines that were celebrated 500 years ago, and you begin to look at 500-year-old buildings, all you look at is Catholic buildings. All the old churches are Roman Catholic. And for many, many years, the Protestants, because they were persecuted or whatever it might be, really didn't have resources to build buildings. And then when they did eventually build buildings, they were built during an era when there were no fellowship halls, there were no kitchens, there were no youth groups, there certainly were no all the other stuff that we do in church, ladies' Bible studies, Sunday school class didn't exist in many of these historic buildings. So we were confronted with a problem of wanting a building that would communicate where we stand in line with historic doctrine, but wanting a building that was also contemporary in its functionality. And so in some ways, we had to adapt some historical architecture to a modern footprint, a modern plan, and we tried to do that as gracefully as possible and communicate while at the same time meeting the other goals. All that brings us to our design for our building. You'll see it is a French country, a French chateau kind of a design. That is something that is popular in a lot of corridors today. It does communicate something of a historic look, but doesn't necessarily communicate that our church is either Catholic or Anglican, but is attempting to stand in line with something that is historic, something that is established in terms of our doctrine. We'll get back and look at this just a little bit later on. This is, of course, just a rendering. We're still working on some of the finer detail of the building. But I wanted to walk you through the floor plan just a little bit. You'll see it basically falls along two wings with a center lobby or center foyer. That's the shaded area there under the red arrow. That foyer, I think, is just under 3,000 square feet. So it's about half the size of this room in terms of the foyer, if you want to have some concept of how big that might be. It also has, you can't see it as clearly there, but you can see here that it has an open area up above it. When you walk in, there'll be surrounded on the outside with a catwalk, but you'll be able to gaze up into the second floor and hopefully have some sense of grandeur when you walk into there. Just behind the foyer, we have planned a little cafe where we can be serving coffee from a counter. That is obviously something that's important to a lot of us. You guys drink just around 10 gallons a week right now. That'll probably be going up in the winter. But we want to have some gourmet coffee service. That is not just because we like coffee, but because coffee has become, at least in our culture, a time of fellowship. It's like you would go to Britain, and tea time is a time of fellowship, or in other places around the world, those are times of fellowship. Coffee shops are places where people meet for fellowship, or it's where they meet for discipleship, it's where they meet for Bible studies. You go into almost any one of them, and that's a part of the way we do ministry these days. Right behind that, you'll see a pretty substantial kitchen, which we've never had. It has lots of storage in it, but should be able to fully service any kind of fellowships and conferences that we would do. You'll notice even on the side a little bridal parlor because we hope that there will be some weddings that will come along and people would want to use the building for that. This, of course, is the worship center. I think on the floor, on the ground floor, it seats around 470 people, if I remember correctly. But it's basically taking up that entire wing right there. And then on the other side would be the church offices. So you see a full office suite where all the staff would be located. Next to that would be the primary education wing, where we have classes for basically first through fifth grade located there. When you move up to the second floor, again, you have those areas that are open to below, so you can kind of see the catwalk that moves around those open areas as you'd peer down into the cafe or peer down into the lobby area. You have more education space there with some classrooms, large classrooms for both adult Bible study and also for children and youth Bible study. We have a room that will be dedicated to the seminary, Expositor Seminary that we're participating in. Of course, on Sunday, would also flex for other purposes such as Sunday school. And then on the end, you have a really massive room that is a flex space for our youth and student ministries. So it'll have a movable wall. It'll basically turn into a big chapel for Wednesday night activities. I think it's going to be, I believe, over 2,000 square feet whenever it's totally flexed. Right in the front, you'll have what I think will be a really neat space, which is a reading room, kind of sitting over that catwalk, looking down over the cafe, hopefully surrounded by the books of our church library, but a great place for you to come, just relax, spend some time in the Word of God, spend some time reading some theology or whatever it might be, but we want it to be a very inviting environment. And then, of course, the balcony that we'll be overlooking adds more than additional 100 plus, I can't remember the exact number of seats, to the overall capacity. You can move down, and there's a basement, which is basically our children's wing, and you can look there. All of those are dedicated to first, or I should say, toddlers or infants through five-year-olds. There'll be what is necessary these days, secure check-in, so that people will come, drop their kids off, go through a registration process, and their kids would be behind locked doors really for the whole time, and we'd be able to properly steward them as the Lord's entrusted them to our care. It's really a nice space for the nursery workers who were crammed into 400 square feet for the last 10 years. They'll really be able to spread their wings. More than that, they'll be able to let their kids run just a little bit around in the rooms. So that is the building in general. You can see it's kind of designed with a focal point there on the center. Just a little word, you know, you can't really see a lot of the texture of the building. That's partly because of the rendering, partly because some of that is still being worked out. We're thinking about some various limestone kind of products, some cast stone around the windows and doors and stuff like that that will bring a sort of that ancient feel to the building, but we're still looking through, thinking through some of the products that are available on that. But the building itself, you know, is largely complete in terms of its design phase. We know the footprint. We know the overall aesthetic look. We know the flow of the building. This is a little look at the front where you'll have drop-off at three different areas. You have drop-off at the worship center, at the foyer, and then over at the offices. And then for days like today, when it's raining like crazy outside, around back we'll actually have a covered drop-off, so that if you want to access the building and remain dry, you'll be able to do that. But for the most part, you know, we left the front of the building unobstructed so that we could really utilize the location of the building, the visibility along the interstate, and really showcase what we think is a beautiful design for the building. I won't show you much of this, but just a little idea of what is to come, kind of building out the back of the building. You can see that that center tower will still be the focal point as you enter into the building and enter into other phases that come. Believe me, those are not settled phases. Don't think that that's the ultimate design, but just some concept of where the building will be going. We will attach things, if you will, to the back there. And so that's it. That's the what we have to present so far. We'll be Lord willing, uploading some of these images to our church website in the days to come. So if you want to peruse a couple of them on your own leisure, we welcome you and encourage you to do that. So we'll have just a few minutes for Q&A. If you want to ask any questions about the progress, about the building, about the design, I'd be glad to answer those as best that I can. Or if you have other questions, feel free to ask those too. Anna? Yeah, I actually had a slide that showed that, but it didn't render very well on the PowerPoint. But essentially, it is designed so that that tower and the arms of those wings face the ramp whenever you're entering onto 575 from Ridgewalk Parkway. So if you can imagine, it's not sitting perpendicular to the interstate. It's not sitting directly north, but kind of northwest, so that you're actually almost like it's welcoming people who come right down the interstate. Other questions? Yes. No, there's no Baptist Street. No, there is actually. Believe me, I would have. You would have been justified in me taking my job if we forgot the baptistry. I can't. Let me see if I can go through here. It's not fully designed, but I can show you kind of where it's supposed to be. You'll see here in the gray area behind the worship center, there are two little white boxes. One of them will be a baptistry. So it'll be a baptistry at least at this point that probably sits off to the side. We haven't given up on the idea of a baptistry that sits behind the pulpit, but to do that, you actually have to lengthen the building, which is floor space and money and things like that. So as a matter of efficiency, we're looking at possibly doing a corner baptistry. Yes?
Do we have a choir loft of any sort?
There is no choir loft. We have tried to schedule enough space in the auditorium so that we can do choir risers pretty comfortably. It'd be a lot bigger stage, as you can imagine, than what we had in the past. I'm not sure. Where's Darby? Darby, is it deeper than this? Do you know? Can't remember. Okay. I'm pretty sure it's much deeper than this. I think it's 24, 27 feet or something like that. So that we've got plenty of room to have, you know, whatever we have out front, but have a full set of choir risers. And the reason we do that is because we don't sit a choir every week, but we would like to do that more often, but we probably don't anticipate doing it on a weekly basis. We'll continue to do it seasonally, and then maybe if the Lord wills, we'd progress to maybe a monthly or something like that. Oh. Oh, yes. You know what? I'm not sure. I'm not the engineer. I certainly would have my preference and tell him that I would love to preserve as many of those hardwoods as we could, but sometimes I find you get in those projects and they say, this can't happen. So, yes, I mean, for whatever say so I have in it, I would gladly say yes, let's keep as many of those old trees as we can.
Probably worth touching on the 8.6 acres of the 14. Yeah,
thank you. Yes, probably the oak trees you're thinking about are on a section of the property that is not yet something we own. We have, there's just under 15 acres there. We purchased just under 9, I think it was 8.7 when it's all said and done, the way we carved it up. And so we still have an option to purchase the remaining 6 over the next 7 years, and we hope to be able to do that before the option expires. So the option, for those of you who don't know what an option is, basically the owner can't sell the land, can't market the land to anybody else while the option period remains. So he's basically holding the land for us in the case that we want to buy it. I'm personally convinced that he really wants to sell it to us. He's been a great partner to work with and is very enthusiastic about having a church there. Yes, David?
Is the basement just under the one wing?
It is. It's under that. It mirrors that left wing over there where you have all the education space. It's basically the same footprint that's right under that. So there's an elevator that services all three floors right there. Yes.
The reception area or the
Yeah, if you see it there, you know, we what we have envisioned this foyer to be is not just a lobby, you know, and this gets into what I talked about, circulation space. We really created a very large circulation space in the middle because it's going to service the primary traffic that comes out of the worship center that's going into the education wing or going down to the nursery or going up to the other education. And so rather than having long hallways that go throughout the building, we have more modest hallways, but we have that major big circulation area. And that also allows us to be the primary lobby and circulation as we build phase two and three. That will still be a decent enough lobby, even if you come into, say, a 1,000-seat sanctuary someday or more. That lobby would be sufficient for that kind of space. But at the same time, in the current phase, we can use it the way that we have flex space even in our old building. We set up tables. We can have receptions or whatever out there. We can do meals during conferences out there. And as an alternative, you have the upstairs youth area, which, as I said, I think when it's all opened up is more than 2,000 square feet, which could be a pretty nice reception area during weddings and things like that. So all that stuff self-contained in the building. To give you a little idea, I'm probably going to get the number wrong, but I think our worship center at our old building was 2,400, maybe. It seems like I remember it being 60 by 40. So that youth wing will be almost as big as our previous worship center whenever it's all opened up. So that'll be another area as an option for receptions for events. Yes?
These
are scheduled to be chairs right now for banquets and things like that. We liked having the flexible space in our previous facility. Now, of course, the balcony. Yeah, the balcony is going to have, you know, stair steps, and so you can't necessarily do a whole lot there. But at this point, it would seem that that floor is going to be flat. Plus, whenever we build a sanctuary behind it, that whole worship center will have another floor added to it, and it'll become a multi-floor education space. So, yeah, we'll keep that bottom floor flat. Yes, Dave?
Will there be handicap accessibility, like an elevator, et cetera?
Yeah, if you can see it, when you come into the first area, off to the left, you'll see there's a little square there. That's a stairway wrapping around an elevator. So you'll have handicap accessibility from ground level. You'll be able to pull right up to the building, ramp, you know, right into the building and go straight into the elevator without having to, you know, navigate, hopefully, any difficult spots. Yes?
Pastor, are there any architectural or infrastructure concerns or with the county or the city?
Thankfully, I'm not an architect, so I can't answer that question. Don't have to. Yeah. Well, it's interesting. Our property is not in Woodstock. Our property is a county piece of property that's completely surrounded by Woodstock. And it's an island of county property. They've not been able to annex it. In fact, they would love us to annex it because when you come into the city, they have, like you said, all those provisions, and they can really dictate what you build, how you build. The primary negative mark for us is if you build in that city zone, you're forced on the street out in front to widen the street, to put the LED lamps, and to put all the sidewalks. That cost Woodstock City Church, it cost them $1.1 million. Just for the road, before they ever touch the property. So we're trying to avoid those kinds of costs. The county is, I believe, more generous. As long as you fall within their standard coding, I don't think there's any special coding that I'm aware of for this particular piece of property. Anna, do you have another question? Well, I'm not an attorney, certainly, on that, but I think that they're somewhat limited on their ability to force us to annex. They have approached and asked us to annex, which gives me the impression that they can't force us, but they would like to. They'd like us to. And I think after we build the building, we wouldn't be opposed to it. But before we build, I think we certainly would rather work with the county. The one on the far left, the little angled arm, that's actually a retaining wall that kind of allows you to have the turnaround. Yes, the one with the circle. Oh, that is the drop-off. That's the covered drop-off. Yes. Yeah. That's a little fire pit courtyard just outside of the cafe area. So when you come into the cafe area, you're going to have what is essentially a three-story window that'll be looking out over all the trees out back, and then you can pick up your latte and go sit out in the nature with the fire pit out there. Yes. I don't know. I do know that there are codes that very strictly dictate that. I know we were under them when we were at our previous building. I believe it's one parking place for every two seats in your sanctuary. I'm not sure, but I think that's the case. So in which case we would have to build, it would seem, at least 320 parking places. But I don't know the exact number that they have. The site plan, the formal site plan, is being worked on right now by the civil engineer, and we hope to have that back in the next month or two. Yes.
Will there be a playground for the kids?
Yes, there will be. Don't ask me where. We haven't actually gotten to that kind of detail yet. Yes. It is, because it's surrounded by city. We will probably tap into the city sewer right there. There's lots of construction that'll be taking place. As you know, right across our property is a assisted living place that's already going in. We talked to the city a couple weeks ago, and they confirmed a rumor we heard that Holiday Inn is looking at moving in right next to us. So that'll actually be nice for conferences and for weddings and stuff like that, if that carries through. But those people will also probably bring sewer. If it's not there already, they'll bring it sewer at least out to their property. Yes?
You mentioned, a kitchen, and then you also mentioned having a possibility to have a table set up for various functions. Is there no Eden fellowship hall?
There's no fellowship hall, which is one of those things that I mentioned. You know, we certainly thought about, and I know a lot of churches come just standard, but as a way of cost cutting, we tended to think about flexible space rather than a dedicated fellowship hall.
So, in light of that, do you have dedicated storage space? Because I don't see any storage in the classroom. So, I'm wondering, do you have rooms set aside for storage of tables? And
yeah, there are some. I wish I could pull up the screen and PowerPoint to some of it, but I mean, I think that's been something that we've struggled with from the beginning. I've talked to the architect about that, somewhat leaning on him to know what is the appropriate amount of storage for the appropriate amount of square footage. But we haven't gotten down to where we would literally itemize the kind of way that we would use each of those storage rooms that he has drawn in. You'll see one, I believe, that's right tucked between the bathrooms and the elevator. It's a little grayed out area right there. That would be one that's on the main floor. And I don't think he's drawn it in here. Maybe he has. There's a major one in the basement area. Let me get all the way through. But you'll see two major grayed out areas in the basement, which are also significant amounts of storage. I think one of them is 700 square feet, or maybe not that big. Maybe not that big, but it's pretty big. Any other questions? Chris? That's Randy's office. No, The tower is aesthetics. In fact, we haven't even fully decided whether or not we've actually talked about leaving it open and making it appear like a bell tower up there. That's still something yet to be determined. But the maximum area in which you can kind of actually go up would just be the second floor. Now, there will be, that tower will be open, like you'll be able to go up there and it'll be towering above you in terms of open air space, and the windows, all that stuff will be shining in, those little round windows and stuff like that. So when you're in that reading room, you know, it's going to be a really nice environment, but you won't be able to go up there. Yes?
The large foyer.
Uh-huh.
The space for that, can you help us understand, compare that space to our former sanctuary?
It's about the size of our former sanctuary, if you can think that way. I'm sorry, I didn't review the exact square footages before I got up here this morning, but I think they're in the same ballpark. If that last one was around 2,400 square feet, this foyer is around that same size. Yes? The primary entrance, when you come in and you see the front of this building, will be coming off of Woodstock Parkway. And it's hopefully going to be somewhat uncluttered by parking. So you'll have, you know, two main roads that come up. One will be entrance, one will be exit, probably with a little turnaround up there, very nicely situated. We really have tried to, make the building where it is an attractive element. And we want to make sure that if we do that, we have an appropriate kind of entrance that will highlight what we think is going to be a really nice-looking building. So the parking will be sort of arrayed from the side and around the back. Yes, there. There is, you really caught me, I don't have all these images, but there is, in the 8.7 acres we bought, there is a narrow roadway that goes back to Rope Mill so that we can have road access there. So you can access the property from both ways, but the primary entrance of the church will be off of Woodstock Parkway. Other questions? Y'all have lots of good questions.
Someone has to ask, the restrooms.
We do have them. You can see there's some restrooms here. They're blue, I think it is, in this particular drawing. And then you move down to the main area. You can see the blue is also restrooms. And then when you go down to the basement, there's also similar restrooms. So I'm kind of leaning on the architect to know exactly how many of those we need for the space we have. Yeah, do we have any more building questions? We can take other questions from the floor. Yeah.
I'm just wondering, how do we manage the noise control in that foyer area?
Do you have to? I don't know. I haven't really thought about the acoustics of it. It may be inevitably echoey. And that can have positives and negatives. But probably, you know, if you went into a food court or something like that, you know, where they have sort of open ceilings and stuff like that, you get some sense of it. Now, we will have lots of furniture for sitting, and we'll have probably, some carpeted area or at least some throw rugs that are out there that will absorb some of the sound. But, yeah, it'll probably be lively on a Sunday morning. Isaac, I was going to come back to you. I will get back to you whenever. The cost, that's a great question. It's, I think, $5.7 million for the building proper. And then you have about $325,000 architecture fee over and above that. Of course, that doesn't include what we've already paid for the property, which is around $1.5 million. And then an additional $800,000 that we will probably dump into it over time in terms of furniture, fixtures, and equipment. So In order to squeeze into this building in the time frame that we would like to, we might move in skimpy in terms of furniture. At least that's what I would propose. You know, we may not have all of the foyer furniture we want. We may not have all the, you know, wall hangings we want. We may not have all the decorations we want when we move in. My preference would be that we would move in sooner without that stuff and then add that stuff over the course of a year or two. So that $800,000, at least from my perspective, is something that we would pay out over a period of time, maybe even after we occupy the building. Well, we built the whole property around a flag tag field. Yes, I think that'd definitely be a priority for us, you know, having lots of space for kids to do what they do at our church. They play a lot, so. Crimson and white will be the sanctuary colors. Nobody would come. Other questions? All right, well, we'll open the floor. Oh, we got one back here. Laura. You know, we have not gotten to that kind of detail of the internal decorations. I mean, I think it would be certainly appropriate for that. So, thank you.
I heard we did decide on the lime green shag carpeting.
The shag carpeting only in the youth area. Any other questions? Yes, Mark. Yeah, we have it. All we know is conceptually where the building's going, and the architect has presented us an initial footprint, but we really haven't reviewed that much at all or gone back and forth with him about it. But it will go, we know, behind that foyer area. So the idea, really what we're trying to achieve is when you walk through that tower, that being the centerpiece of the building, you would walk, you know, directly into what is ultimately the main foyer one day. So the building looks like, when it's all completed, it looks like it was designed that way from the beginning. Any other questions? Yes, Sophie.
Is there good coffee?
That'd be better coffee. Better coffee. We'll have the full array. She's a coffee drinker, so I mean. Any other questions? Isaac, now, what was your question?
Okay. My question was, in regards to everything that's going on right now in the media, Planned Parenthood, what should our response be when we're invited to join rallies, protests, and sign petitions? Obviously, we know we're supposed to stand. Banding together with other people and think your guidance on that?
Yeah, I think, so your question, just so everybody can hear, is you're asking what is our role as a church and as individual believers in social protest against things such as the recent videos about the aborted fetuses and stuff like that? Well, I could start by saying, first of all, I mean, anybody who has watched any of those can't help but be utterly disgusted by the degradation of our society and the level of really wickedness that people will go to in order to earn sometimes just $100. So it's tragic, it's heartbreaking to see it, and I'm sure I'm like most people. I mean, I feel personally moved. I feel moved and angered, you know, when I think about the kind of stuff that's going on. So I think our first response is just to be repulsed, obviously, by that. But the bulk of evangelicalism, it seems, has used that as an impetus to stage protests. I personally don't think that that is the best way, the most effective way for us to accomplish our mission Our mission is not simply to stop a social tragedy like abortion or whatever it might be. Our mission is to shine the light of the gospel for the world. And my fear in social protest is that we wind up making enemies of the very people that we're trying to reach. We wind up making enemies of the people who need to hear the gospel. And it's not just about a particular abortion doctor or nurse. It's really about a whole society who sees that and feels embittered against the church for whatever reason. So I would point to the images of Christ and the Apostle Paul, who lived in probably as debauched a society. You know, it was a common practice in Rome for people to expose their babies. There's actually a Greek word for exposing their babies. And what that meant is when the child was born, they would take them out and set them in the wilderness and leave. They didn't have sophisticated forms of abortion, but it was very, very common for them to just kill their newborn infants. Now, that's every bit as outrageous to me as the kind of cruelty that takes place under the banner of some social cause or women's rights today. And yet you don't see the Apostle Paul calling on the church to stage protest against those kinds of things. He had a laser focus on building up the church, on establishing a witness, on living what he calls in Titus and in Thessalonians, a quiet life, a respectable life within the society. Now, I don't fault people who go out and do those kinds of things. Not at all. I know where that comes from. I feel the same angst that they feel. But I think there, first of all, might be in some cases, not all cases, but in some cases, naive about what that actually is going to accomplish. As if that is going to somehow stem the tide or change the culture in some way by doing these protests. Someone might point to the civil rights protest with Martin Luther King and say, well, certainly that had some good, that made some progress in society, and it did. I think the difference between that and what you see going on with the abortion protest is that those were direct violations of those people. You know, when Martin Luther went to sit at a counter and was arrested for it, it pricked people's conscience because this was a direct violation of his rights, and he was standing up and paying the price for it. And I don't know why, you know, mentally, psychologically, that had an impact on ways that these kinds of injustices don't, but for whatever reason it did. And so, you know, when it comes to civil protest, I would put that more in line with maybe what the apostles did, you know, who were willing to suffer for the sake of preaching Christ. I think we ought to be willing to suffer in order not to be corralled into sinful behavior by the government. We ought to be willing to pay whatever price is necessary, jail, even our lives. But it, for whatever reason, has not proven effective when it comes to the pro-life movement. If you just look at the history of the pro-life movement, I mean, there have been thousands of protests in numerous ways, in all kinds of places, you know, the Mall of Washington, D.C., into individual clinics. And again, I wouldn't ever say that any of those people had ill motives, but I think their methods are not conducive to the gospel, nor have they proven to be effective for the sake of cultural change. I would much rather, you know, I know what I thought. Whenever I saw those videos, my initial thought was, you know, man, I want to go down to the Hope Center. I want to go down and how can I invest some time to reach one more young lady for the sake of the gospel and for the sake of the life that's within her? In other words, I think about bringing it down on an individual relationship level. So certainly let yourself be moved by those things. Certainly let yourself be motivated to do those things, but I think there's some more positive contributions that we can make as believers and as a church. And there are, you know, you talk to anyone working at the Hope Center, they would tell you there's still vast needs for people to be involved in those ways. So I want to be involved. I want to make an impact. But But I also don't want to lose the focus of who we are as a church, and I don't want to make enemies of the people that we are called to reach with the gospel. So I think that's why you never see Christ staging a protest, even against wicked rulers. You never see Paul, you never see Peter, you never see any of those guys calling for protest in the midst of their debauched society, because they knew that the ultimate answer was the gospel. And so they had a dedicated focus to the gospel, and that's just where my heart is and where my mind is. I want the church to be the church within society, and I want individuals to be believing and faithful individuals, and to exercise that in what you might say are positive and productive ways of society. And you can do that for very positive change. Now we would stand against any kind of forced or imposed mandates of abortion. We would stand against those kinds of things if they were forced on us individually. But at this stage of what we're talking about, we're really talking about a cultural slide, not an individual violation. So we certainly would affirm that believers ought to be good citizens. We ought to be voting citizens. We ought to be all... I mean, it's a shame to me if a believer doesn't exercise their vote and participate in that process. We ought to be people who feel free to voice written publications, whatever it might be, the horrors of what's going on around us, and try to inform people. But I also think there's some very positive ways that you can impact individual lives through the various kind of ministries that are set up to minister to those ladies who are considering abortion. So that's not a full sermon on it, but that's a snippet of at least where I approach the subject. All right, well, we have a great response. Thank you guys for coming out. And like I said, if you have any further interest, we'll try to post these to the website. And if you have any questions, feel free to approach me, any of our elders. We'd be glad to answer any of those questions that we could in the remaining time. So we're just going to dismiss for coffee and be back in here at 10:30 for worship.